Greetings and welcome back to another ongoing series of Shirman Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. We're now in Masechet Makot, Daf Bet Amud Aleph, starting at the beginning of the first Mishnah, with a great amount of excitement. We're beginning a new Masechet after having completed Masechet Sanhedrin. But wait a minute. It's not so clear that we're starting a new Masechet, as we will see right away in the Gemara, and we'll discover by the end of the first parak, which will be within a few podcasts. This chapter, at the very least, seems to be part of the conclusion of Masechet Sanhedrin. We will see that in the Gemara, and I'll point it out at that point, but also the last Mishnah of this parak deals with some general statements about the Sanhedrin, including the fact that Sanhedrin applies in Eretz Yisrael and Echutz Laretz, and the very famous statement that a Sanhedrin that would execute every so often would be considered a bloody Sanhedrin, which gives the sense that at the very least, this parak is really the concluding parak of Masechet Sanhedrin. It's entirely possible that the next two parakim really are the completion, and Masechet Sanhedrin, beginning with parak Shvi'i, goes through the Arba Mitot, and then in this parak with the death of Edim Zomim, which is a unique sort of piece, and then fills out all the rest of the laws of testimony because of the opportunity of speaking about Edim Zomim. In the next chapter, the second chapter, Perek Sheni, it deals with the next punishment down from execution, which is Galut, exile, for inadvertently murdering somebody. And then finally, the last Perek deals with the next punishment down, which is Makot, with a list and the procedure of how Makot are administered. However, there is reason to argue that really Masechet Sanhedrin had 12 chapters, and this chapter, the beginning of Makot, was the end of Sanhedrin, and the other two chapters were sort of free-floating chapters that ended up getting put together so that they would not be lost, and there are many occasions in smaller Masechtot in Shas where that's the case. But in any case, let's get started. And as I mentioned, the first topic that is dealt with is Edim Zomamim. So what I've done is on the handout, the first verse is really the entire parsha of Edim Zomim, and just one quick introduction. Edim Zomim, or literally conspiring witnesses, are generally given the same punishment as the one they tried to inflict on the innocent person that they testified against and sort of accused. What we're going to see in our Mishnah is two out of a few other cases where that punishment is not given for one reason or another, and therefore they're given Makot, thus the name of the Masechet, and thus the tie-ins of the last parak. But the method by which Edim Zomim become cast as Edim Zomim is if they testify and then there is a Gmar Din, the Beit Din rules along the lines of their testimony, and then other witnesses come and testify, Imanu Hayitim, which means you, false witnesses, were with us in another location at the time about which you testified you saw this event happen, this crime, this violation, this transaction, whatever it may be. Otherwise, if the other witnesses come and testify that these fellows are not valid witnesses, or that they were there at the same time and saw something different, then we simply have Heidei HaChasha, and it's a double knockout, and we don't believe anybody. There's a Gzirat HaKatuv, the text tells us that we do accept the testimony of the second set to disqualify the first set. Okay, let's get started. Ketzad HaEdim Nasim Zomim. Now, the wording here is a little bit tricky. How is it that Edim becomes Zomim? Meaning, in what cases do we apply Makot to Edim Zomim and not the regular rule? Example, Me'idim anu be'ish ploni shehu ben grusha o ben chlutza. Two people come and testify that a particular Kohen is really an invalid Kohen as a ben grusha ben chlutza, meaning they testify that they saw his mother get a deget, or chalitza, before she married his father. And so that means that certainly these witnesses have to be considerably older than the fellow about whom they're testifying, parenthetically. Now, Eino Mimiasas Ben Grusha Ben Chlutza, Tachtav. We don't say, as we normally would have in Zomim, that these false witnesses, these lying witnesses, conspiring witnesses, should be made into Ben Grusha Ben Chlutza, which, of course, if they're not Kohanim, is a meaningless phrase. But even if they are Kohanim, we don't say that. Ela Lokar Ba'im, they get Makot. Lokar Abayim is a short version of getting makot. Me'idim anu bishploni shu chayav liglot. Or if they testify that somebody is obligated to go into exile, meaning they saw him inadvertently kill somebody through negligence. Enomim yigleza tachtav. We don't say that he goes. They go into galut. Ela lokar Abayim. Rather, they get makot. Now, the first thing the Gemara is concerned with is obviously the language of the Mishnah is awkward. Hakaitzad ein ha'idim asizom min bailei. The assumption with which the Gemara is working, just as a straw man assumption, is that our Mishnah is a standalone in the beginning of a new subject. So therefore, it should say, in what case do Edim not become Zomim? Oh, Miniktani Lakaman, later on in Mishnah in our parak, it says, Aval Amru Lahmeachatem Edim, Shareboto Hayom, Atamaitim Adam Makomploni, as I mentioned in the introduction. If witnesses come and testify differently, then they knock out. But if witnesses come and say, you were with us at that time, Hare Elu Zomim, implying that Cloud the Elo Ein Zomin, implying that everything listed in the Mishnah till that point are not Edim Zomin. So our case is not Edim Zomin. So what's going on? The answer is our assumption was faulty. We knew it the whole time. Tana Hatam Kai. The Tana is picking up from there, meaning we have to remember that Sanhedrin, which is 11 chapters in the Mishnayot, what we have is chapter 11 is chapter 10 and vice versa. So the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin is Kol HaZomin Makdimin Lo Tam Mita. That's our last Mishnah. Remember that a bat kohen gets sreifa, but the fellow at bia with her, if she was betrothed, gets skila, and if she was married, gets chenek. And the zomimim who testified falsely that these two had relations, instead they will get skila or chenek, not sreifa. In other words, we have edim zomim who will not get the same thing they tried to inflict on her, but on try to inflict on him. And then our Mishnah picks up, it says, V'yesh edim zomim achirim, she'eno sin bahen din hazama kol ikar. So in other words, our Mishnah is sort of the next step away. Here we have edim zomim who are not going to get din hazama at all, ela malkut arbaim, rather they're going to get makot. Ketzad, v'yedom ishpon nishu ben gusha ben chutza, enomim yaseh ben gusha ben chutza atav, eloket arbaim. Good. Now, minahani mili. Why is it that we don't make the guy ben gusha ben chutza? Let's look at the issue itself. I'm Rabbi Shua ben Levi de Amar Kra, because the pasuk says in Edim Zomim Vasitem Lo Kasher Zamam. You have to do to him, the conspiring witness, what he conspired to do to the other fellow. Lo v'lo lezaro, meaning you do it to him, not to his kids. And if you make this guy Ben Grusha, that means that his kids are chalalim also. I believe Selinu today v'lo lezul lezare. So why don't we just make the Eid Zomim, if he's a kohen, make him a Ben Grusha, but not his kids? The answer is, but then you're not giving him what he conspired to do to the other guy. Because what he conspired to do to the other guy was to make him and his children and grandchildren chalalim, and instead to give him, shall we say, the lighter case of you're a ben grusha, but not your kids, is not kasher zamam either. So that's Rabbi Shimon Levi's explanation for why we do not employ the normal punishment of kasher zamam in this case. Papada Omer Kalvachomer. Papada has a different take. It's a Kalvachomer. Omaha Mechalel and Omitchalel. If somebody is Mechalel others, he's not Mitchalel, meaning if a Kohen has relations with a Grusha and thus makes the child who comes out of there a Halal, but he's not Mitchalel, he gets Makot, he violated Allah, but doesn't change his status. Habala Chalel Velochilel. This witness who tried to make somebody a Halal and wasn't successful, Enodin Shalit Chalel certainly should not be Mitchalel. Now, that's Bar Pada's Kal V'Chomer, but the problem is that Kal V'Chomer uproots the entire notion of Edim Zomim. Ravine Imkem Bitalta Torat Edim Zomim. You're getting rid of all Edim Zomim because, say the same thing, Umaso Kelano Niskal. If somebody gives Skila to another, he doesn't get Skila for that, he gets Sayyid. Habali Skovalo Sakal. If somebody tried to administer Skila and wasn't successful, Eno Din Shalo Yisakel. Right? And that, of course, isn't true, because all of Edim Zomim is based on the idea that even though you weren't successful in getting this done, as a matter of fact, only because you weren't successful in getting this done, because we didn't kill the guy, that's why you're getting killed. So Edim Zomim just doesn't work within this Kal V'Chomer, and it just is like, clearly Bar Pada's Kal V'Chomer is rejected. We go back to Rishuman Levi's explanation. Okay, next. Galut. So Menhanimili, why don't we send the Edim Zomim to Galut? Amerish Lakish Tamakra. Who Yanus Alachat Yarim? If somebody kills inadvertently, he has to flee to one of those cities. Who Velo Zomim? He does, but not Edim Zomim. So that's Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Umar Kal Vachomer, Umahu Shasa Maaseh, this guy who actually did something, B'mezid Eino Gola, meaning an actual killer. If he did it B'mezid, he doesn't go to Galut. Hein Shelo Asu Maaseh, B'mezid Eino Din Shelo Iglu. This is kind of like Barpada. He says, after all, if a guy would kill somebody, and but did it B'mezid, he doesn't go to Galut, because Galut's only for those who did it B'shogeg. These guys, who didn't even do anything, certainly, even though it was B'mezid, they did a non-action, which is testimony, it's not an action. They did B'mezid, certainly they don't go into exile. In other words, they have the component of B'mezid, which takes you away from exile, and they didn't do anything, which certainly shouldn't make you closer, so they shouldn't necessarily go to exile. The answer is V'yano tenet, turn that inside out. And think about this. If a guy kills intentionally, he doesn't go to Galut, why? Because he did something so severe, we're not going to let him get atoned simply by going into exile. He has to be killed. But these guys who didn't really do anything, so they should go into exile even though they acted b'mezid. Why? They should have a kapara. Meaning, Rabbi Yochanan's Kal Vachomer could be turned against him and say that these guys who acted, although they didn't do anything as severe as actually killing, they just testified, and they did a b'mezid, so maybe we allow them a kapara. Again, just like we did a minute ago, we clearly accept the first explanation of Rish Lakish. It's based on a pasuk, hu yanus. Okay. Amar Ula. Remez leidim zomim min ha-tor minayin. Where do we find an allusion to edim zomim? So remez leidim zomim, what kind of question is that? Aktiv, asimol kashar zomam. It's an open, it's a clear, explicit pasuk. You don't need a remez. Al remez leidim zomim shalokim min ha-tor minayin. That's what we're looking for. How do we know that the fallback position for edim zomim, if you can't employ kashar zomam, is makot? Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's exile. Maybe it's who knows. Dichtiv, what's the answer? In the parsha of makot, it says, v'itztiko et ha-tzadik v'yashiu et ha-rasha. If two people come before the Beit Din, they will find the innocent innocent and the guilty guilty. And the next pasuk is Vayan Bino Kota Rasha. And when they give stripes to the Rasha, then make sure not to do more than 40. Now, what's the connection? Once Beit Din says this guy's Chayiv and this guy's Potter, why are they going to suddenly give the guy who's Chayiv Makot? Ella, the way we read it is that in the back text or the undertext is Edim Shershiwa Tatzadik. Originally, before the text, we have Edim who claimed that the innocent guy was guilty. And other witnesses came and righted things so that the innocent is now innocent. Now, who are the Rishayim here? Not the opposite fellow in the Din, but rather the Edim. And then what does it say? They get Makot. So you see that there's an illusion that Edim Zomim would get Makot. What do you mean? It's in one of the in the Decalogue in the Aseret HaDibrot. Hit number nine is Lo Taneh Re'achai Chaker. Not allowed to perjure yourself, and therefore you should get right there. You see that it's you vie every time that you lie in court, then you should get makot because of Lo Taneh, which means that you could argue that if you can employ Kasher Zaman, fine, and if you can't, give him Lo Taneh. The answer is Mishum Dahave Lav She'in Bo Maaseh, because testifying is Lav She'in Bo Maaseh. There's no action involved. We saw that in Sanhedrin. You can't give makot for a law that doesn't involve any action. Somebody hates his friend in his heart, we don't give makot. Somebody speaks Lashon Hara, we don't give him makot. As terrible as it is. Okay, so that's our answer. Tana Rabbanan. Arba dvarim nemru b'edim zomim. There's four statements about edim zomim, means four exceptions. Ein nasim ben grusha ben chalutza. As in our Mishnah, edim zomim cannot be turned into a ben grusha ben chalutza, even if that was their testimony. Ein golim lari miklat. They don't go into exile. Again, as we saw. If a person has an ox and the ox kills somebody, this takes us back to Bava Kamma, and the ox kills somebody, although we dealt with it in the first parak of Sanhedrin, then if the ox was muad, the owner has to pay kofar. Really, the owner should die, but there's a kofar, like a ransom that he pays also. Let's say Edim Zomim testified that a particular person's ox killed somebody, and it wasn't true. They don't pay the kofar. The Einim Karin Be'Eved Ivri, they also cannot be sold as an Eved Ivri if they testify that somebody else stole and didn't have the money to pay and it would have been sold as an Eved Ivri. We'll see a limitation on that in a minute. Mishum Rabbi Kiva Amru, there's a fifth thing that Rabbi Kiva, the quote of Rabbi Kiva, is saying, Afein Mishalm Piyatzman, they don't pay if they admit their guilt. Now, let's go through these one at a time. Einis Megrusha Vachlutza, Karamran, we said that. Einis Megrusha Vachlutza, Karamran, the first two we already covered. Ein Mishalm Takofer, what's that? Kesavri kufra kaparet. It must be that the author of the Braita holds that kufra kaparet, it's a machloket in Bava Kamma, or a chakir in Bava Kamma, is kofar really a kapara, or is kofar really a payment of nezek? So if it's kapara, then there's no reason for these guys to do it because their ox didn't kill anybody. Nobody died as a result of the negligence. So therefore, there's no kapara to pay. Vahani la b'nei kapara ninu. These guys don't have any need for kapara for this particular crime. So man tana kufra kapara. Let's see if that really works. Who's the tana holds kufra kapara? That's who it is. The tanya. V'natan pidyon nafsho. What does the owner of the ox give? Pidyon nafsho, a ransom for his life. What does that mean? Demei nizak. What's that? The value of the person who died. No, the value of the person who did the damage. So now, my love, Alakimipalgi, isn't the machloket, Tanakam Rabbi Shalom Ruka, about how we estimated the Marsava Kufra Mamona, Marsava Kufra Kapara, that Rabbi Shmuel holds that, Tanakam holds Kufra Mamona, you're paying a value of Nezek, and therefore you pay based on the guy who was hurt or killed. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Shmuel says, no, kufa kapara, and therefore you have to pay to ransom your own life. So the answer is, Amar Papa. Lo, the kuli alma kufa kapara. Everybody agrees that kufa kapara. Vahacha, bahacha mipalgi. What's the machlok? And Amar Savra, but the Nizak Shamin, Amar Savra, and Isaac Shamin. Meaning that we agree that you, the owner of the ox, are redeeming your life by making this payment. The only question is, what value you have to give? The value of your life or the value of the life that you took, that your animal took? So my time, I do Rabbanan. So why do Rabbanan say it's the Meimazik? The answer is Nemar Hashata Lamata and Nemar Hashata Lamala. In our case, it says that Kasher Yashita Alav Baal Hayshav Natan Bifluvim. That's above. Meaning in the other case of the two men fighting and they bump into a woman who's pregnant and she loses the child, then it says Kasher Yashita Alav, and that's based on the value of the loss, not the value of the person who did it. So malahalan ben nizak afkam ben nizak. So therefore, just like over in that case, it's based on the actual damages. So here, Rabbi Shmuel says, Rabbi Shmuel says it's pidyon nafsho. You have to redeem your own soul. So it's the meimazik. Rabbanan says in pidyon nafsho k'tiv. We agree. You're redeeming your life, meaning you did terrible things. It's a kapara. Miyu ki shaminan ben nizak shaminan. But when we estimate it, it's based on the nizak. Okay, the fourth thing in the Mishnah, in the Braita, was Ve'inim Kerin Bevet Ivri. Now, Savra Amnu Lameh Rav Hanuna thought as follows. Ha'anim Ileichet Ileididei. That's only if the guy they were accusing had money, which means if he'd really stolen, he could pay back. Demigo De'iu Lo Nizdabin, since he would not have been sold as an Eved Ivri, Inunami Lo Nizdabni, they also can't be sold, even if they don't have money. Meaning, here's the din. If somebody is accused of stealing, and it's true, it turns out they stole, and they don't have money, then they're sold as an Eved Ivri, and that's how they work it off. So now, Rav Amnuna said, if the accused had money, since he never would have been sold, therefore the Eidim Zomim aren't sold. This is Rav Amnuna's original thought. If the accused didn't have any money, even though the Eidim have money, Mizdabnu, they're still sold. Because the idea is that had their testimony been accepted, had what they said was true, he would have been sold. So they're sold too. V'leim Ruleh, why don't the Eidim say to him, I'an tavilach mihave mizdavnat, if you had money, you wouldn't have been sold. So we also, in other words, we're going to be like you. Not just that you would have been sold, so we're sold, but you were in a position to buy yourself out had you had money. We have the money, so we can buy ourselves out. Hamnuna thought as follows. If either one of them has money, either the putative ganav, the accused ganav, or the Eidim Zomim has some money, they're not sold for the two arguments. If neither one of them has it, mizdavni, then they are sold. So in other words, our rule about Eidim Zomim not getting sold as Eved Ivri is not ironclad. There's one situation. What would happen, and that's if neither the accused nor the Eidim Zomim has enough money to pay. So Malay Rava, no, Torah says he sold for his theft. You sold for theft, not sold for Eidim Zomim. So it's an exception that is unconditional. Okay, the last item was Mishum Rabbi Kiva Amru, that they don't pay based on their own testimony. Ma'itam Rabbi Kiva, Kasavar Knasahu. He holds that Eim Zomim is a Knas, is of course famous in the Sugya of the Bright of Rabbi Chiya and Baba Kama. Knas and Mishalim Piatzva. You don't pay a Knas when you admit to it. That's a general rule. Mod of a Knas Patur. Amaraba Teda Sharelo Asumaset. Mishalmin. The Eim Zomim, after all, didn't do anything and yet they pay, so it's clearly a Knas, because a Knas is when it's not a quid pro quo. He says something else. They came and accused somebody of stealing, and in the meantime, the original guy who supposedly was stolen from still has his money. And still these guys have to pay. So it's clearly a knas. They're paying for something there was no loss. So, my nihu, what does that mean? In other words, Rav Natan's position is the same as Rabba's. He's saying that they didn't really accomplish anything, and yet they have to pay. So, hainu de Rabba. So the answer is, Eim Avchein Rav Natan's. The answer is, it's not a separate thing. It's similarly, Rav Nachman said that in other words, Rav Nachman is continuing with Rabba's saying and says a similar thing from a different perspective. After all, nothing happened, and yet they have to pay, so it's clearly a knas. Rav Yehuda Marab, Eid Zomem Mishalim Fi Chalko. He makes this statement, and Eid Zomem pays per his contribution, as it were. My Mishalim Fichalko, what does that mean? If you have two Eidim and they accuse the guy of owing $1,000, each has to pay $500. Tanina, that's a famous Breita. Mishalshin Mamon, right? Mishalshin Mamakot. We divide up the financial liability, but not the Makot. The Makot, each of them gets. Mita, each of them gets. So what was Rav referring to? In a case where only one of them became Muzam, which means the guy came and said, you, one Eid, you were with me at the time, with us at the time. Shalim Palgadeh, he has to pay his half. So, Mimishalim, since when? Vatanya, Eidim Zomim Mishalim, Mamonad, Shezum Mishneihem. You need both Eidim to be Muzam for Eidim Zomim to kick in at all. You don't pay half. So, Amarava, so the third explanation is, Beomer, in his Rav statement, it was a little unclear. What does it mean? Amarava, third approach, Beomer, Eidut, Sheker, Headati. If a guy comes to Beit and says, I lied under oath. So, Kol Kamine, he doesn't have the right to do that, meaning we don't listen to him. Kevachi, Yishuven, Echozer, Magid, as we saw in the second paragraph of Tubot, once you testify, you can't recant your testimony. So you gave testimony, you can't turn around and say, I was lying. We don't believe you. So that's meaningless. Elova Omer He'adnu is the fourth explanation. But Omer He'adnu Vuzamnu Vaveitin Ploni. A guy comes and says, I, along with another guy who's not here, testified, and we were Huzam in another Beitin. So, come on, to look Rabbi Kiva. That means that this Braita is not like Rabbi Kiva, at least, Rav's statement is not like Rabbi Kiva. Because Rabbi Kiva Amar Anfin Mishalim Piatzva, what did Rabbi Kiva say? You don't pay if you admit to it. And this guy's coming and saying, I admit to it, so I have to pay my own half. He shouldn't have to. And we understand halacha is like Rabbi Kiva. Ella Bomer He'adnu V'huzam V'veitin Ploni V'chuyav Numamon. A guy comes and says, me and another guy, I and another fellow, testified in a particular Beitin. We were Huzam, and they made us pay money. We didn't pay it yet. I'm coming and saying, so now, I'm not, it's no longer a knas, because now they were already mechayvus mamon. I have to pay. Now the other guy, there's no reason for him to pay. We don't know that it's true at all. I would think that since we can't make the other guy pay, maybe this guy doesn't have to pay either. Kamash malan, mishalem lefi chalko. Okay, we'll pick it up in the with this very, very intriguing short Mishnah in Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, the next part of Mishnah Aleph. In the next podcast. In the meantime, again, welcome to the very exciting study of Masechet Makot. We're off for a relatively short but very exciting journey together. In the meantime, everybody should have a wonderful day.